This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show. It is Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN App, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and all of our great ESPN stations across the country. She is Michelle Smallman, the best beard in the game over here.
Hello.
It's Chris Canty.
You know what time it is.
And I am Evan Cohen. Yes, Chris Canty is so competitive, he wants to make sure that his beard is on point at all times, and I got to be honest, it is.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It looks good.
I appreciate the compliment. It, you know, really what wasn't on point last night?
Your football team?
Stephen A. throwing out the first pitch at the Yankees-Blue Jays game.
I disagree.
You disagree?
Here's why.
How do you disagree?
Do we see it, Evan?
Okay, here's why I disagree. How great is this for Stephen A.'s show today, and First Take, and all of us? If Stephen A. Smith would have thrown a perfect strike, and you're watching on the TV side of 2&U, as Molly Karam tweeted out, was that a bounce pass? Which is a great line.
It's an embarrassment.
But if he had a perfect strike, it's a non-story. Now, it's a big story.
No, it's not a non-story, because he hyped it up yesterday. He said he was going to go out there and throw some gas, and the fact that he bounced the pitch... How do you bounce the pitch?
Look at his reaction.
Like
he knows.
Like, Smalls, if anything, go ahead and airmail it. Show you got some arm talent. You know what I mean? Don't go out there and bounce the pitch. That's an embarrassment.
So Dave Duncan, legendary pitching coach, St. Louis Cardinals, arguably one of the best pitching coaches in baseball history. My former co-host Randy Carricker threw out a first pitch in St. Louis, and we called Dave Duncan for some advice.
Yeah.
Dave Duncan said, aim high and let it fly. Because when you're that far away, it's obviously going to fall shorter than you ever imagine it to. So Stephen A. did not aim high, and he did not let it fly.
Yeah, it's nerve-wracking. I did it a couple of times for spring training at Roger Dean in South Florida, where the Marlins and the Cardinals play, and I've done it in Port St. Lucie with the Mets. I was more nervous doing that than I was when we started this show. Like, I wasn't nervous for this show. The stage is massive.
Okay.
But this is what we do for a living.
Yeah.
Throwing out a first pitch is insanely nerve-wracking. I bet you Stephen A., who is as big of a star as there is, was actually nervous last night.
You think so?
I'm telling you. Have you done it?
No, I haven't done it. I haven't had the privilege of it.
Well, I'm sure somebody listening right now will now.
I would like to throw out a first pitch.
You can get
preferably
a first pitch
for my baseball team, the New York Yankees.
Maybe and start I can a little lower than that. You're going to start right at the Yankees.
No, I'm going to start at the Yankees.
He's Yankee worthy.
But here's the thing. I'm not going to bounce the first pitch. And if you know that it's coming, wouldn't you want to practice that a few times?
Oh, I did that.
Like, you got to actually throw off a mound. You can't just go in the backyard and toss a ball. You actually have to throw off of a mound because the angle is different. That probably factored into Stephen A. bouncing it. I don't want to believe that Stephen A. doesn't have the arm strength to throw the ball 60 feet, 6 inches, right? So I got to believe that it's because of the angle, being on the mound is what drove the ball into the dirt. I don't want to say Stephen A. just is awful at throwing out a baseball. I just can't believe that.
Oh, I would have the measuring tape out in the backyard. I would be standing on a crate so that the elevation was simulated.
Oh, no, you gotta go all in.
Oh, I would be practicing like you can't believe. I'm not gonna embarrass my family name if I go
out there. That's it.
No
that's
way.
It. You embarrassed your family
no
name.
No way.
Stephen A. embarrassed the Yankees fans out there. It's an embarrassment to Spike Lee, to everybody that reached for the pinstripes. Last night was abysmal. It was terrible in my Charles Barkley voice.
Terrible.
Stephen A. can't do that.
When I had my first one that I did in Florida, I went to Cardinal Newman High School, local high school in West Palm. It's where Brooks Koepka went to school, Abe Elam went there. Some other NFL players went there. Scotty Barnes of the Raptors went there. And I would literally go on the mound and practice like I was preparing for a Major League Baseball game. It was crazy. And it was so nerve-wracking. And so you say practice in the backyard. I don't think you can do that, because I think you guys are right. The mound is what throws the whole thing off.
The elevation?
Yeah, you can't just practice in the backyard.
So how did your pitches go? Were you proud of them?
No, yeah. I didn't throw strikes, but I hit the catcher. I didn't bounce it. I didn't throw it over the catcher's head. So I was happy with that. I do have a friend that threw maybe 7 bounces before then. It was a disaster. Absolute disaster.
7 bounces?
I think 7 bounces. Seven bounces. It was awful. It was like you were bowling. Just awful. Absolutely awful. Kind of like Canty's football team last night.
Wow.
What a transition.
Although
here's the thing.
You had to take it there?
The Giants lost to the Niners 30-12 last night on Thursday Night Football. And CeCe has come in today, and the floor is his, because you're going to try to spin this a little bit positively for the Giants here?
Well, I thought they did a good job of keeping it close early, right? It wasn't an absolute blowout.
Is that what Tom Coughlin
said? Well, you set the over-under on what time we were going to go to bed at 10, and I definitely took the over on that one because they had it as a one-possession game in the third quarter.
Yes.
I just didn't see that happening. I think it was a 17-12 game in the third before the Niners kicked a couple of field goals, made it 23-12 going into the fourth, but I thought that Wink Martindale came up with a good game plan to keep Brock Purdy off balance. Now, you would never know it from the final stat sheet and looking at his totals, but you could tell that he was off balance on the first drive that the 49ers had. There were a couple of footballs that Brock Purdy threw up for grabs, and his receivers had to play defense. The one on the seven cut, which is a post corner to George Kittle, Brock Purdy throws it blind, and Kittle has to knock it down. Otherwise, Adoree Jackson's got a pick going the other way. The same thing happened in the end zone to Deebo Samuel on the same drive. So it was clear that they had a game plan that was disruptive toward what the 49ers wanted to do. They create a lot of long third down situations, but unfortunately for them, Kyle Shanahan came up with the perfect play call, the screenplay to Deebo Samuels that hits for 30 yards, or how about the screenplay to Christian McCaffrey on a third and 13 that ends up converting. And so that's where I have to give credit where credit is due. Kyle Shanahan put on a masterclass when it comes to situational football last night.
Yeah, and the third down, the third and longs, there was like a sequence, I want to say, over the second and third quarters of that game. It felt like five or six in a row on a third down where there was either a dump-off screen pass that went for 20 or a flag. Yeah. Like, every single time, it felt like the Niners figured out a way of getting a first down, but it wasn't like third and nine and they had a 10-yard completion.
No.
It was, oh, here, Deebo, go. Which is smart, because if you have the weapons like that and you have a quarterback that can get them the ball, and Brock Purdy wasn't great last night, right?
No.
I mean, you look at the numbers, 25 of 37, 310, and two touchdowns. It looks like he was great on the surface, but the reality is there were multiple plays where they could have picked off the ball. And in my mind the entire time, I kept going back to ESPN's Field Yates' tweet from a few weeks ago where, oh, by the way, the Niners have $41 million in cap space. I kept going back to that in my mind, and I'm like, wait, did I read that wrong? And I looked it up last night. No, it's true. And that they have that much.
He said, no, it's true.
Yeah, it's true. They have insane cap space, because I don't want to say they're nervous about Brock Purdy, because they shouldn't be, because he's literally never lost a home game. I mean, a regular season game. This team has won 13 straight regular season games, and dating back to last year, and Christian McCaffrey has scored a touchdown in 12 straight games.
Wow.
They are dominant right now. So even when they don't look that good at times, or they get a couple of breaks with penalty smalls, they still win 30-12.
Oh, absolutely. We know Christian McCaffrey, when healthy, is an absolute game wrecker. And the Giants, you talked about the Patriots and how it felt kind of like a moral victory, even in a loss, that they had played better. I felt that way about the Giants, especially in the first half. But the San Francisco 49ers, top to bottom, are just too tough. I don't know, after these first 3 weeks, if we've seen a team that's as complete or as tough as this one. They are going to continue to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, so here's the thing, and I can't be but so mad at my New York Giants, because they were just outclassed last night, not just from an X's and O's standpoint, but the overall physicality of the San Francisco 49ers is what stood out to me. And over the course of that game, you could see them just grind the Giants down. And so when I was playing in football, Coach Coughlin, Coach Parcells, they would always talk about the indicators for physicality, and there are five of them. It's rush differential, sack differential, yards after catch, yards after contact, and red zone efficiency. Last night, the differential when it came to the run game, 141 yards for the 49ers, 29 for the Giants.
Can you give those five things again? I want to hear those again.
So rush differential, sack differential, yards after catch, yards after contact, red zone efficiency. So the rush.
And they said if you do that, you're going
to
win.
If you win the majority of those battles, you're going to win the physical battle. Now, it might not translate into winning the game, because you might have some turnovers baked in there, different things like that. But last night, the 49ers, 141 rush yards to 29 rush yards for the Giants. Sacks, they were even at two. Yards after catch, 99 yards after catch for the 49ers, 14 for the Giants. Yards after first contact, 57 for the 49ers, 19 for the Giants. Red zone efficiency, the 49ers had two scores in the red zone, the Giants only had one. So, I mean, that tells the story in terms of the weight class that the two teams are in, and that's the part that's probably a little bit disappointing for Giants fans, because you realize you're just that far off from the other elite teams in the NFC.
Yeah. Those numbers are pretty jarring. Yeah.
But it's not surprising because we sat here yesterday and we played, and people can go back on the ESPN app and listen to the podcast. And when we did the Canny or Canty, I want to say in the 9 a.m. Eastern hour yesterday, and we talked about receptions, you said you thought receptions for some of these guys like Debo and Kittle wouldn't be high, but the yardage would be because of the yards after the catch. And that's exactly how it played out last night. And the Niners are arguably the best team in the NFL. And I don't even think that's a bold statement. No, it's not a bold statement. They're the best team in the NFL right now. They don't lose.
No, they don't. And I said that after week one when they went into Pittsburgh and took their cookies. I said, this is the most complete team top to bottom in the National Football League. Yeah, the Dallas Cowboys over the first 2 weeks have embarrassed the New York teams, but it feels like those are the JV and the 49ers are the varsity. So it's a different story. Now, for those people out there making the argument, oh, well, the 49ers needed to beat the Giants worse than the Cowboys beat the Giants in order to prove that they're the best team in the NFC, stop yourself. Yeah. That's not how football works. First of all, we're talking about on a short week. I get that the Giants didn't have Andrew Thomas and Saquon Barkley, but the 49ers didn't have Brandon Ayuk. And a short week is always weird for both teams. But when you look at the overall physicality in the head-to-head matchups between the 49ers and the Cowboys in recent memory, just go back to the division round loss by the Cowboys last year, 2022 playoffs out in Levi's Stadium. When it comes to the physical battle, they were outclassed by the San Francisco 49ers. So again, those key indicators, the rush differential in that game, the 49ers 113 rush yards, the Cowboys 76 rush yards. When it comes to sack differential, they were right there. When it comes to yards after contact, the 49ers 46, the Cowboys 38. When it comes to yards after catch, the 49ers 91, the Cowboys 85. Now, both of them had one red zone touchdown, but the Cowboys also had a red zone turnover. So those are the things that actually matter as it pertains to being able to win football games. And the 49ers have proven themselves when they matched up with the Cowboys, when it matters most, that they are overwhelmingly the more physical of the two teams. So why, when these two teams match up in a couple of weeks, would we think it would be any different?
The logic of because you beat one team a certain way, you have to beat that other team a different, like, that makes absolutely no sense. To sit here and compare and contrast the Niners and the Cowboys based on point differential against the Giants maybe is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But the Niners last night, definitely in the zone. So was Christian McCaffrey specifically. 18 carries, 85 yards, touchdown, 5 catches, 34 yards for Christian McCaffrey. He was in the zone last night. Get in the zone, brought to you by AutoZone. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Coming up, the Niners. From the window to the wall, they better not drop the ball. We'll get to that next on Sportsmanlike ESPN Radio.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
I don't think the camera was on for that one.
Oh, I did the...
West Coast?
The West Coast.
The West Coast? I thought that was Westchester. I wasn't sure.
Oh!
I wasn't sure.
Oh!
There is a Westchester in L.A. Wow. Both.
All right.
Oh, boy.
It's wild in the Westchester streets.
That's right.
Look out.
Wild.
You know what?
The mean streets of Westchester.
Somebody once knocked off my yarmulke at Hebrew school.
Wow. On purpose?
No, I'm just joking. It's on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Is it okay if I laugh at that joke?
I think so.
Yes, okay, I mean, right. It's not to make fun of any religion or race or anything like that. It was to make fun of myself. SiriusXM80, ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN app. You can follow us on Twitter at UnsportsESPN. Okay, so last night we had a dominant performance by the San Francisco 49ers, 30-12. They beat the Giants. They're 3-0. Let's just think about this for a second and put this Niners team in perspective. So there are teams in the NFL this year that are Super Bowl or bust, right? I think we look at the Kansas City Chiefs. As long as Mahomes is there, they're a Super Bowl or bust team. I think the Buffalo Bills, in my opinion, have to get to a Super Bowl. They don't have to win it, but they have to get to a Super Bowl. Worst case scenario, AFC Championship. I think Philly can get away with not getting to the Super Bowl. I think that Dallas can get away with not getting to the Super Bowl. I think Baltimore, Miami, Cincinnati, Detroit, all the other odds on favorites here. Per Caesars, as you see on the television side, can all get away with not getting to the Super Bowl. I think the San Francisco 49ers over the next 3 years have more pressure on them to win a Super Bowl, arguably since the early days of Tom Brady in New England. And here's why. When you look at this San Francisco 49ers team, they have to win a Super Bowl this year, next year, or the year after. And really, I'll say this year and next year. Have to. There should be the pressure on them. When we look at a way in which a team is built, CeCe, what do I always say? The key to football is what?
Having a quarterback that outperforms his contract.
Okay. So outperforming your contract means you better perform better than your percentage of cap. Patrick Mahomes makes 16.9% of the cap for the Kansas City Chiefs. Josh Allen makes 8.2% of the cap. Joe Burrow makes 8.6% of the cap. Brock Purdy, San Francisco 49ers, who's never lost a regular season game. Okay? Never lost a regular season game. They've won 13 straight. Makes 0.4% of the cap. Ooh. Which means the rest of the team, they have 99.6% of their salary cap with $41 million available this year allocated to the other 52 guys on the roster. And that quarterback has to outperform that contract. Not only is he outperforming the contract, even when he didn't even play that well last night, he has 17 touchdowns, 4 interceptions in the 12 games he's played in the NFL. This team is built perfectly. We have not seen a team built like this since Russell Wilson's early days with the Seattle Seahawks and Tom Brady's early days with the New England Patriots. We have not seen this where a quarterback makes this little and a team is this good and a quarterback can perform this well even despite what he did last night. They have to win this year or next year or else it's a colossal failure.
But to counter that, do you not think that they could find another Brock Purdy?
No.
Or at least find someone that could be as at times as efficient as he's been?
No, I don't. And I'm going to tell you why. Because anybody you would find that would be that good would make more. So that 0.4% of cap, if you were to say, hey, if they were to go out there and get Kirk Cousins, let's just say for argument's sake, who Kyle Shanahan has been rumored to want forever, and since their days in Washington, the percentage of cap will be higher, which means you cannot pay the other 52 guys as much. And I think that Brock Purdy has now graduated from the can't you find anybody like that to, okay, he's good. I mean, CeCe had him in the top half of the league in the quarterback, maybe even the top 10, I think you put him in at one point.
Yeah.
And he's proven to be that because even in a bad game last night, they still won by 18 points. He still didn't turn the ball over by way of interception. They are built perfectly. They have to win this year or next year before this guy gets a contract. You don't see things like this. I have two total examples in the NFL in my memory of this working like this. It's just Russell Wilson with Seattle and Tom Brady with New England early on. There's no other example of this.
But if Brock Purdy was on, let's say, the Indianapolis Colts, do we think that he would be as valuable as he is?
No.
Absolutely not. We say so much about Kyle Shanahan and the system and the weapons around them and the defense of San Francisco. That's the only counter that I would have is that because of the personnel and because of the coaching staff there, that they might be able to find someone, even if it's a rookie or somebody who's not as expensive as a Kirk Cousins, and have them be efficient enough to allow this team to still have success.
Yeah, Smalls, until Evan's point, like, I think the way to get a quarterback or to guarantee that your quarterback outperforms his contract is to have him on a rookie contract.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the surest way to guarantee that. But what are the odds that you're going to be able to find lightning in a bottle twice? Like, how are you going to be able to find another Brock Purdy in the draft? Think about it. They took a huge swing with Trey Lance and they missed terribly. The only thing that saved John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan was Brock Purdy's play down the stretch last year and early on this regular season. If Brock Purdy isn't capable of going on that deep playoff run, getting his team to the conference championship, we're singing a completely different tune about this regime and a different I guess, a different point about the urgency that this organization has to have in order to win. But to Ev's point, to his larger point, they have to be able to capitalize on this window while they have Brock on a controllable deal, because if you don't, then it's going to be hard to replicate that in terms of the overall roster construction.
Exactly right. Think about this. Arguably, the number one defensive free agent that was out there last year coming into this year was Hargrave, right?
Yeah.
Okay, they got him, and they're a defensive team. How can you afford him? Because your quarterback is 0.4 percentage of the cap. It's ridiculous. Well, upgrade.
Well, just think about all of the players that they have that play at an all-pro level. I mean, you have Fred Warner, top-of-the-market contract for an off-the-ball linebacker. Nicky Bosa just signed an extension for $34 million a year. You have Trent Williams, arguably one of the best left tackles in the game. He's got a top-five contract at his position. You can go on and on. George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey is the highest-paid running back. You can't afford all of those all-pro guys if you don't have a quarterback on a controllable deal. And I think that's the part where it feels like an outlier in terms of how they do it in comparison to everybody else. And to
it's lucky. Yeah, it's lucky, well, it's honestly.
Not, I don't want to say it's luck, but it's more art than science, which is why a lot of teams don't go down that road.
Right.
Because it's exponentially harder to do it that way. You have less margin for error because you have to absolutely be right on the quarterback. And the 49ers have already proven that they can be wrong about quarterbacks when they invest a lot of resources in them and taking them high in the draft.
But that's why they have to win this year or next year. They have more pressure in my mind on them to win either this year or next year, because at some point, even if you guys are like, oh, come on, Brock Purdy's replaceable. Fine. Another team will look at him and say, we'll take him if you don't want him. We'll give him $30 million
a year. We'll give him the Jimmy Garoppolo deal.
I was just going to say Jimmy G's the blueprint, right?
Well, yeah, we'll give him the Jimmy Garoppolo deal. And that's what's going to continue to happen. And the odds of the 49ers finding another guy that can step in and play the way that Brock has played. I mean, through the first 2 weeks, Brock had the highest QBR in the NFL. And I don't think he did anything last night to make it go down. Now, in last night's game against the Blitz, Brock Purdy was 17 of 27, 236 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's against the Blitz. And on third downs, when they were in third and longs, Brock Purdy was 9 of 12 with a passer rating of over 130. Like, you're not going to find that level of quarterback play with a guy that's taking up 0.4% of your salary
it's
cap.
It's crazy.
You're just not going to get that.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, this is a guy that on the Amazon Prime broadcast last night, Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit mentioned he has a roommate. He makes $900,000, which is a whole different topic of conversation. If you make $900,000 a year, unless your roommate is your spouse, live alone, will you please?
Have you seen real estate prices in the Bay Area?
You can't afford a studio apartment.
They're going for well over a million.
Rents, Brock. Give well me a break. A
I actually respect it, though. I respect it.
I mean, he's I'm a, not saying to waste
a,
money.
He's a man after my own heart.
I get
he's
it.
A financially responsible young
I'm
man.
I'm just saying. I'll tell you.
Is there a team with more pressure on him to win the Super Bowl based on that argument that I just made than the Niners this year?
And the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys got to get it done. They got a quarterback that
has just because of the helmet. No,
it's not because of the helmet. It's because of all of the players that they have on top of the market deals, including their quarterback. Dak has a $60 million cap hit in 2024.
That's a larger percentage of cap than .4.
Exactly. They just paid Trayvon Diggs a bunch of money. They're going to have to pay Micah Parsons $35 million a year.
They're not built perfectly. They just gave
Zach Martin a bunch of money.
Yep.
I mean, they got Tyron Smith, who's getting a little bit older. They've got DeMarcus Lawrence, who's getting a little bit older. Like, they have a lot of players that they're financially obligated to, and they're going to have to pay core players even more money. They just gave Terrence Steele damn near $100 million, and he's their right tackle. So the Cowboys are leveraged to the hilt in order to get this thing done. And on top of that, you have the layer of Mike McCarthy essentially being on the hot seat if he doesn't go on a deep playoff run. That team has more pressure than the San Francisco 49ers. I think the 49ers window is longer than the Dallas Cowboys, albeit not by very much. I think the Dallas Cowboys have to get it done over the next couple of years. I think the San Francisco 49ers have 3 seasons in which they can try to win a championship.
Maybe 2 if Brock Purdy continues to outperform his contract and says, no, it's time for me to get paid. And by the way, to the Dak point, Pat Costello, producer, thank you for this information. Dak next season, 22% of the cap, which means you have 78% to spend on everybody else. The Niners have 99.6% of the available money to spend on other people outside of their quarterback, and their quarterback per CC is, worst case scenario, a top half of the league quarterback. Think about that. They are built perfectly. They better win now. Coming up, the Bears GM spoke about a finger, a thumb, Which way is it pointing? We'll get to that next on Sportsmanlike, ESPN Radio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
I mean, you want me to do it or do you not want me to do it? Who's the black sheep?
Look at you.
It's Unsportsmanlike. What's the scenario? On ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance.
This guy, very cool.
Whoa, I'm out. I'm leaving. I've done all I need to do.
You've peaked right now.
I've really peaked.
6:35 a.m. Eastern Time.
Wow.
Friday the 22nd.
I'm at a loss for words now all of a sudden.
It's Friday. You're feeling good about the weekend coming
now
up?
Now I am. ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN app. Speaking of this weekend, by the way, Saturday College Game Day, Notre Dame, Ohio State. Jen Ladd is going to be there.
That's a big one.
She'll win an Emmy for a story that we've never heard that'll make us cry. It'll be interesting to see which one Jen will have this weekend, by the way, on Game Day.
She's probably going to win every award for that piece that she did on Coach Prime and Peggy, the woman in her 90s.
Have you guys
seen that?
That was awesome.
God. I watch it maybe 60 times and cried every time.
Okay,
it's
if we're going to power rank Jen's Game Day pieces, I'm still going to put Jump Around number one.
Well, she won a lot of awards for that
one. And also because it was all about the University of Wisconsin and House of Pain and everything like that.
I'm just
throwing that out there.
You can never be objective when it comes to anything
that's
Wisconsin related.
So now I'm back to not cool. Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's not cool, but you cape hard for your school, man.
But you know what's funny? So I got accused of being Harriet the Homer sometimes in St. Louis because I ride so hard for my city. Evan rides hard for his school, but all of his other teams are front runners.
Yeah,
so I can't
even
call him a homer because they're not from his home.
I don't know if I can call him. I don't know if I can call the Miami Heat a front runner though. I don't know if I can call him a front runner.
They
had a lot of success, but it's just like nobody picks the Miami Heat to get to the NBA Finals. And just every year, year in, year out, they find themselves in the Eastern Conference Finals.
And don't worry, by the way.
Nobody expects it, but it happens every other year.
Yeah. I'm not like
they find a way.
I'm not refreshing Adrian Wojnarowski's Twitter every 4 seconds here, feeling like the Dame deal's about to happen. I mean, it's other people that are doing that.
Yeah,
it's not me.
That's going to happen.
Yeah,
that's
I feel it too.
Today?
That's going to
happen.
I feel like it's kind of, like all the internet buzz. It feels like it's close, right?
Yeah, it's going to happen.
By the way, CeCe's a sneaky Heat fan. I don't know if people have realized this. Oh. He's a Lakers fan, but he loves. See, I have to remember.
Well, who runs the Heat?
Pat Riley.
There you go. Okay. There you go.
So
there you go.
He and I are similar in this business structure, organizational stuff. I mean, he's a Parcells guy. He's an Al Groh guy. So how can you not like the Heat? Because that's kind of your system. It's the same kind of thing.
No doubt.
But by the way, what he doesn't like, so we sit there and Javante and Pat and Nuno and Jerry and everybody putting together this great audio production coming back there. And all the Justin Fields stuff. And this dude next to us is laughing just hearing the Justin Fields stuff from the last couple of days. Ryan Poles, the GM, got in front of everybody yesterday and had this to say about all the quote-unquote finger-pointing with the Chicago Bears.
I can't be more clear than this. No one in our entire building, none of our coaches, see Justin as a finger-pointer at all. He has always taken ownership of anything that's happened on the field. He takes it head-on. He works. He grinds. He puts his head down. He works with his teammates, works with his coaches to find solutions. In my opinion, you got a young quarterback trying to figure it out who hasn't had the cleanest start of his career, who last year with the roster, had to put the team on the back, do some unbelievable things athletically. Now he gets talent around him and has to figure out and balance when to do those cool things athletically when to lean on others. And that is sometimes a gray place to live in. And that takes time. That takes time on task for him to take that next step. And everyone's on board helping him get into that place for him to be successful.
Smalls, he lost me at finger pointing. Like, you can say Justin Fields is not a finger pointer, but ain't that exactly what he did when he talked to the media on Wednesday? They asked him, why is he playing like a robot? And he said it could be coaching, but gave no other plausible explanation on what it could be, i.e. it's coaching. He threw his coaches under the bus. How is that not finger pointing? Like, all of the other coaching points that Ryan Poles made, okay, I get it. But I can't take you seriously when the comments by your quarterback cause you to have an impromptu press conference that wasn't scheduled to do spin, to do damage control because of something he put in the ether. Think about trying to manage the fallout from what Justin Fields did. Beyond just trying to go through the week's worth of preparation and get ready for the Kansas City Chiefs, which is probably going to be the toughest opponent that they play all season. But now you got to deal with this extra layer. And on top of that, you got the nonsense with the defensive coordinator resigning in the middle of the season. Like, this is absolutely ridiculous. And I said it yesterday, and Evan, you disagree with me. But the worst thing the Chicago Bears could do is what Ryan Poles did yesterday, which is come out and speak publicly about it. Because nobody's going to want to care what they have to say until they actually do something different on the field.
Yeah,
and that's what we're looking for in week three.
I asked the question about whether or not they needed to address this publicly from a leadership position. Obviously, they thought they did. Not as high up as Kevin Warren, the president, but one step below the general manager and Ryan Poles. He did address it. He did own the fact that there's adversity and there's turmoil, et cetera. Obviously, he didn't clean it up in your eyes because you're denying the obvious, right? It's clear finger pointing. And then, you know what actually I didn't like? And I know it's going to come off weird. There was that moment in practice yesterday where Justin Fields knew the cameras were on him, and he goes up and he hugs Luke Getsy, the offensive coordinator, to have this like, hey, look at us. We're friends now. Like, that doesn't mean you're cool. And I think Justin Fields is actually going to be good this weekend. I think they're going to have a little bit of a bounce back in terms of his play, not their winning.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just so unnecessary, I thought.
That was like the celebrity stage, we're not breaking up paparazzi photo shoot, you know? Like, oh, TMZ's hiding in the bushes. Let's make it look like we're at the farmer's market together. That was clearly staged, you know what I'm saying? But I disagree, Stacey. I think Ryan Poles needed to come out and say something publicly, or someone from the Chicago Bears organization, not to necessarily do damage control, but to exert their confidence in their quarterback. Can you imagine how Justin Fields probably felt yesterday, knowing that not only every show in Chicago was talking about this 24/7, but that nationally we were all examining the words that he chose to describe the situation in Chicago? So I think from an organizational standpoint, they needed to come out, they needed to exude some confidence in their quarterback. Whether that was incorrect or not, you could say that you don't think he's a finger pointer, but that's what he did. And I know that people misspeak all the time. I do it all the time. I have empathy for people that do that. But I don't think Justin Fields misspoke. I know he did the A-plus circle back. I think he was just being honest about what the situation is in Chicago.
Yeah, Courtney Cronin, who covers the Chicago Bears for ESPN, she said his initial comments on Wednesday was the most forthright she had seen him since she started covering the team. So he meant what he said, and I think he just tried to cushion the blow when he went back with the circle back after practice. But here's the thing. In addressing it from a managerial standpoint, why do you have to protect your quarterback when he steps in it? That's the part I don't understand. Like, Justin Fields has to be accountable. He's going into year three. I get that he's only 24 years old, but he's got a lot of responsibility. He's the quarterback. It's by nature a leadership position. He's responsible for leading grown men, guys that are 30 years old plus, guys that got families, guys that depend on him to play well so they can take care of said families.
Right.
I don't have to be in the business of protecting that dude. I don't. Like, he's the one that created the drama. Let him take care of it. Let him address it. Let him deal with it. And right now, the best thing for anybody is for Justin Fields to go out and ball against the Kansas City Chiefs. And even if he does that, which I'm anticipating he will, it's not just about a one-game sample size.
Agreed.
It's about the rest of the season and him proving to the Chicago Bears that he deserves to be the quarterback for the foreseeable, because there's always an opportunity cost that's associated with passing on talented, cheaper options at the position in the NFL draft. And we've talked ad nauseum about the Bears not only having their own pick, but the Carolina Panthers pick in the first round next year. Those both figure to be top 10 picks, given how the two teams look through the first 2 weeks. So, again, Justin Fields has got an uphill climb in order to prove to the Chicago brass and the fans that he deserves to keep his job going into 2024.
So quickly, answer this then. How would you advise this? Because you said you don't want Poles speaking. He doesn't have to, I don't think, by rules with the NFL.
No, he doesn't. That was
Kevin
him.
Warren definitely does not, the president of the team. But Matt Eberflus, the head coach, does. So Monday morning, when he goes on with Cap and Jay Hood and ESPN 1000 in Chicago, he's got a Monday weekly spot with them. The only thing that they're going to care about is what we saw the last couple of days. Even if Justin Fields goes out there and is 24 of 27, 300 yards, three touchdowns, it's not as relevant as what we saw the last couple of days. So how do you answer it if you're Eberflus?
Well, clearly we've been able to put it past us if he goes out there and has that kind of production.
So he needs that in order for me to answer those questions about Eberflus.
Exactly. Yeah. Eberflus needs that. Justin Fields needs that. Everybody in that organization needs that. They need some positive in Chicago right now because it's an absolute dumpster fire. And the only positive that anybody is going to care about is what they do on the field against the Chiefs.
We just saw the big hug on ESPN2 and ESPN.
Wave it to the cameras.
The hug and the wave there.
Say
coming up
the
next, is there a game that has more riding on it than the Chargers and the Vikings? We'll dive into that next. It's on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Go for it. Come on now. No? You do one line and then it's out.
I thought you guys were going to jump in.
No, we don't want to steal your thunder there. Come on now. It's Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, ESPN2, ESPNU, SiriusXM Channel 80, and the ESPN app, and of course all of our great stations.
I'm anti when it comes to singing Drake. I don't mind rapping along with Drake, but when it comes to singing Drake,
it's like a sing rap.
Not the biggest fan.
Really?
No, not the biggest fan.
So you hate 98% of his songs?
I love his music, but when he goes into the hook and he's singing and all, I can't get with that.
I love, and that song, one of the greatest lines. I knew that she was fine, like a ticket on the dash. Very good, Drake. A plus.
Oh, that's a good line.
Very good.
I have to actually do some math.
Fancy, right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Wow. That's a good one.
Thank me later.
I think that's his best album.
Oh, yeah. For
forever.
Sure.
Okay. So, Chargers Vikings. We're really going to talk about the Chargers Vikings right now. And here's why. It's not as much about them, it's about overall, like, what were they doing? What were the Chargers doing when they could get Sean Payton and they brought Brandon Staley back?
I don't know.
What are
man.
The Vikings doing adding in season when it's so clear? They just got it. They traded for Cam Akers. They brought in an offensive lineman. What are they doing here when they should be like, wait, all these teams now need quarterbacks? What? Who will you give up to get Kirk Cousins? How many picks are you going to give us? These two teams, one of them is going to end up at 0-3 this weekend. And all we're going to do is sit here on Monday when we talk about these two teams and be like, you either should have fired your coach or you should have traded your quarterback. We know one of them is going to have that on Monday. And guess what? The other one will have that 2 Mondays from now, probably. You're shaking your head, both of you. Like, this is a dumb game. That this even exists.
It's a dumb game.
It's a dumb game. Like, it's just like, why? What are you doing, both of you?
I don't think they...
Both the teams, I mean.
I think the Minnesota Vikings know what they're doing. You said it. This offseason, they went through a quiet rebuild. They got rid of a lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball that have been stalwarts. They kept Danielle Hunter. They kept your boy Harrison Smith. But other than that, they pretty much jettisoned everybody. Aaron Kendricks, who used to be the heart and soul of that defense, he's now gone. And so I think
Aaron Kendricks on the Chargers.
They had clear eyes. They were sober-minded when they made the decision to go down this road, which is why I think they didn't extend Kirk Cousins, because they thought there was a possibility that they wouldn't be very good this year. They didn't let the guise of being 13-3 and winning, what was it, 12 one-score games last year. They didn't let that influence where they thought they were in terms of their overall program development. So shout out to them for being able to do that and make that decision. And when you have that kind of success in year one with the head coach, you get a little more leash. Yeah. And so I think they're trying to figure out exactly what they're doing with their quarterback and what kind of football team they want to be in the Kevin O'Connell, Kwesi Adosa-Mensah era of Vikings football. Now, when it comes to the Chargers, I got no answers for you. I got no answers for you. Because if your coach is already on the hot seat, if there's a chance that you could fire him after the first four games of the season, because their bye week is in week five, that's a real possibility if they're 0-4 at that point. If there is a chance that you could do that, then it was a mistake to run it back with Brandon Staley when it was clear that Sean Payton, one of the best football minds that was out there, was interested in your job. For Sean Payton, it was, came down to the L.A. Chargers and the Denver Broncos. And if you look at the two quarterbacks, it really ain't a big choice. It's Justin Herbert versus a washed-up Russell Wilson. Pretty sure Sean Payton would have went with the Chargers. But the fact that you passed on Sean Payton to give Brandon Staley the opportunity to prove that he was a good coach this year, after you're talking about the way that they ended the season last year, blowing a 27-0 lead in the playoffs, is absolutely ridiculous. This franchise, I know people don't want to associate them with being a dumpster fire, but it's pretty bad. Think about it. Justin Herbert came into the league, coach was on the hot seat. Justin Herbert going into year four, coach was on a hot seat. It's hard for good players to overcome bad coaching. When are the Chargers going to take the coaching position seriously? When are they going to get somebody in there that can be the difference in your quarterback and your young, talented team being on the winning side of close ball games? Or how about being on the winning side of games that they have huge leads in? The Chargers, since the beginning of 2022, have the most blown double-digit leads in the National Football League. At some point, something about that has to change. If that ain't coaching, Smalls, what is?
I was thinking about this. Why don't we throw the Chargers in the mix when we talk about the worst franchises in sports? This is a franchise that moved from San Diego to LA and is basically irrelevant. They have one of these young quarterbacks that we think could be a true X factor, a true difference maker, one of those guys that eventually becomes a tier one quarterback. He's getting paid like a tier one quarterback. And we do not talk about the Chargers. They lose, CeCe, to your point, in dramatic and confounding ways yep. all the time. Their coach entered the season on a seat that's hotter than the equator, and yet they start the season 0-2, and we barely blink. We barely talk about them.
Because we're used to it. We're used to that they were going to have those heartbreaking losses. That's the chart. I mean, the Chargers, when we were going through the merry-go-round of teams moving, they should have moved to Vegas. The Raiders should have moved to L.A. And I understand the Raiders.
The Carson Project.
Yeah, but I think that if you look at it, the Vegas fan base, right, and shout out to Q Myers and everybody at ESPN and Las Vegas, the Vegas fan base would have supported whatever team was there.
Yeah.
Right? The L.A. fan base loves the Raiders. So, like, to me, give the Chargers a fan base, which they don't have, really, to the extent that the Raiders and Rams do. Sorry, Smalls. And then, you know, put the Raiders right around the fan base they have. The other thing is, if you go back in time and you rewind of things that happened to connect dots, the Denver Broncos, I believe, hired Nathaniel Hackett in order to get Aaron Rodgers. They didn't get Aaron Rodgers. They get Russell Wilson. The L.A. Chargers kept their head coach, Brandon Staley, and he goes to Denver, right? As a result, Sean Payton goes to Denver. Mm-hmm. What probably should have happened is the Broncos should have realized we are not ever going to get Aaron Rodgers. We don't hire Nathaniel Hackett. They have a coach who's better than Nathaniel Hackett. Sean Payton is available, and he should have been going to the Chargers. Right now, Russell Wilson should probably not be on the Broncos. Hackett should have never coached the Broncos, and Payton probably should be the coach of the Chargers. Now, I don't know where Russell Wilson should have been at that point, if he wasn't going to be with, obviously, the Seahawks, maybe it was the Giants. There were all those rumors about the Giants with Russell Wilson for all those years. Maybe that all would have made more sense. Maybe he should have been with the Giants, and then they wouldn't have had to worry about the contract extension for Daniel Jones. If you rewind time and kind of do where did everybody actually want to go, Sean Payton wanted to go to the Chargers. We all know that. Yeah. The Broncos wanted Aaron Rodgers, not Russell Wilson. Yeah. And I bet Russell Wilson wanted the Giants and not the Broncos.
That's probably true. But I just don't understand how the Chargers can continue to waste a top-tier quarterback talent. Since Herbert came into the league in 2020, he's sixth in touchdown passes, and he's fifth in QBR. The four quarterbacks in front of him from a QBR standpoint during that span, they all have a winning percentage of 66% or better. At what point is Justin Herbert stop wasting him? He's now, he loses half the games that he plays in.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.